right, sweetie?
I'm ready. Good morning.
Reporting live from the beating heart of Nutmeg Country.
Cable actuated and opinionated.
This is Alt Bike Now.
Alternative radio.
For alternative cyclists. I'm Ronnie Romance.
And I'm Aria Cakefist. Oh. Thanks for joining us.
What's your favorite cake?
It would be carrot. Carrot with like a cream cheese frosting.
Oh, that's correct. Yeah. Nice one. Nice one. A chocolate cake for me. Double.
Does strawberry shortcake count as cake?
Well, it's a shortcake.
Yeah, but it's kind of just like
getting ready for summertime. Okay, we're going to, you know, there are so many cakes out there. So many cakes, just like there are so many ways to experience gravel.
That's true. We are talking about the spirit of gravel today.
Folks, yeah, this episode's all about the spirit of gravel.
But before we get too much of that champagne in us, get it, champagne gravel. Anyway, I wanted to thank some contributors we have this week. It's pretty amazing getting these emails in that's like, you have a new contributor in notes. So thank y'all so much for sending notes and words of encouragement and some haters too in the YouTube comments. I love that. So we have contributions from Bradford William Chapin, which is a great name. Wow.
Eric, Bradford William Chapin.
Yeah, BWC.
That's got to be a New Englander.
It sounds like it. We also have Eric Kidwell, which is also a great name. Who doesn't want their kids to be well? And then not a name, but channel called Bikes, Books, and Buildings, which sounds great.
Is that a YouTube channel?
I think so, but that's the name that popped up on my screen. So thank you all so much,
Bradford,
BWC, Eric Kidwell.
Yeah, thank you so much for the support. And thank you, everybody, for writing in and expressing your likes and dislikes.
Yeah.
We'll take it all.
Mostly likes.
Mostly likes. It's been very nice.
Especially shout out to Justin, who left me a very nice voicemail.
Thank you, Justin. Well, as we said, we got a lot to get to.
Like
Not only do we have, a pretty heady show title here as far as the spirit of gravel haunts us.
Yeah.
Basically, we're going to be talking about gravel in the pre-history era and the post-history era, which would be, whether there's a line where, gravel turned from alt to whatever it is now. Whatever it is now. And to help us walk through that, we actually have our first guest ever. This just in. We've got a guest today. And we were talking just when we were getting ready here, because I am like caffeinated to the gills right now. I'm sweating tonight, this morning. Shout out to Franco, who was here over the weekend. He brought me two bags of coffee, one
Franco.
From Loveless Coffee in New York, and one from La Cabra, which is, I am buzzed to the max right now.
Yeah.
Got the sweats.
It's a delightful experience.
Yeah. And so anyway, we were talking before this, getting a little bit nervous because our first guest, we're starting at the top. At the top here. We've got Taylor Finney is going to be.
Who is a lovely friend.
Lovely friend of
and
ours.
Also and, a beast racer.
Should we go through his stats right now?
Just so anybody can get into it.
He's a cycling Nepo baby. The son of Olympians.
Yeah. Connie Carpenter Finney, Davis Finney.
Davis Finney was the voice of cycling when I was growing up. So when I used to watch cycling in the 90s, the Outdoor Life Network. Shout out Outdoor Life Network if you're listening. You're not, because you ended like 25 years ago. I used to watch all of the spring classics, all of the Tour de France on the Outdoor Life Network in the 90s. And Davis Finney was the voice, was the commentator. So I knew, cycling to me in my childhood, like I hear Davis Finney's voice.
That's the voice in your head.
Yeah.
That's
which is really cool. And so, get to meet Taylor way later in life, but it was just cool to be like, oh my God, I can't believe. Anyway, a lot of through lines
there.
I can't believe
it's happening to me.
So
Taylor not only comes from a family of Olympians, he is pretty impressive he's 6'5", so physically he's an impressive specimen.
And we want to talk about being handsome, this guy. Let me tell you, look up some photos. Woo, woo.
Put it away, right. Ron. Put it away. Okay, well, you can't be interviewing.
Having a lot of caffeine. A lot of caffeine. I'm bricked right now.
Supposed to be Barbara Walters, and I'm Oprah. So he became a pro at 16 years old. And this last fact about him is going to get us into the headlines.
If I could talk over you a little bit here.
The caffeine. Yeah. Franco, you're not doing me any favors, but go ahead.
Taylor won the individual pursuit world titles. He also was the last American to wear the pink jersey in the Giro d'Italia. Oh, that was supposed to lead us into the next thing, but we're going to put a little lid on that one. A 2014 crash in the U.S. Nationals in Tennessee into a guardrail kind of prematurely ended his professional career.
I hate thinking about that.
The scars on his legs are insane from that. But in 2018, he came back to finish eighth in Paris-Roubaix. Which is very impressive.
That's insane. Yeah.
So think about that. Like, there's no Americans even close to getting to that level in the Spring Classics right now. So
America, this is
yeah. Not only is this a handsome 6'5", just yoked guy, he's also, as far as the hard men of our sport go, like, this is the last American hard man.
He also has a very beautiful, gentle, sweet spirit. He'll go out of his way to be nice to people. He's very conscious.
He's an artist first, I'd say.
1,000%.
To lead in, he was the last time that we're talking about Unbound, of course, because that's what we're talking about.
He just finished
and
that.
And it just happened last weekend. And if you listen to our previous episode,
we talked a bit about Unbound. Tune into episode 4 because I talk about
a little Unbound backstory for your alt cyclers.
Yeah. So we'll have Taylor on in just a.
Well, I'm still in my intro phase here.
He's waiting for us.
Last time that I raced Unbound was in 2019. I'm using air quotes here. I did it with Leo Rogers, Slim 1000 on Instagram. Him and I did Unbound with our Brooks Topo Designs Crust Ultra Dynamico
team.
We were called the Gravel Gliders. And there was a team of 5 of us.
It was Steph
Ortega.
You, Leo, Matt, and Anton.
And Haley? Yep. Mm-hmm. So Anton Krupicka and Haley Moore. So pretty like cool team that we got together there. I was pretty proud of that whole scenario. And I really, fun. If it hadn't been for the pandemic, I think we just would have kept doing it.
Oh, it was team support.
So we had all sorts of races on the calendar and we were just kind of like an alternative to the proification of gravel at the time, I suppose.
Yeah, because you were wearing just t-shirts and like normal clothes.
But we had team cohesion. We had matching outfits, matching bikes. It was when we were releasing Ultra Dynamico tires for the first time. So it was our 650B by 48.
And everyone was on the Crust Bambora.
Right.
The
release of the Crust Bambora also. Yeah. And so this was a real moment.
The spirit of gravel really felt like it was there.
It was a real moment. And we had such a good time. Yeah. This was the second time I had done Unbound. The first one was with Project Y via Specialized, where I had to ride a Diverge with like 35mm tires and some handlebars that were dangerously narrow for my handlebars at the time. That was the last time Taylor raced Unbound also.
Until this year.
So that we're going to get into kind of the differences between that year and this year with Taylor.
Yeah. The race is 20 years old at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So
we're going to, should we put a little bookmark in that and just run through some quick Giro d'Italia stuff and then get back into gravel right afterwards?
It's your show, Caffeine Man. Take it away. Yeah. So let's get into the headlines. We're obviously very excited to have our friend on the pod and give us a report back on doing hard things that we don't want to do anymore. So happy to reconnect with our dear friend. But yeah, like we said, Taylor was the last American in the pink jersey, which is the jersey of the Giro d'Italia lead. Mm-hmm. So big shout outs to that. That was in 2012 and no American has been able to do it since. So woohoo to our friend here. Mm-hmm. The Giro just ended for the men's. And
we did have an American winning the Queen stage,
That's
which was
right.
which the queen stage of the Giro was 16,000 feet of elevation and 80 miles?
90-something miles. Okay. So that's like double the 2-to-1 ratio.
Can you imagine
climbing
that? And how quickly did that?
5 hours or less.
So Durango kid, Sepkus, won that stage.
Amazing.
He doesn't live in Durango anymore. He lives in Andorra.
Such a good kid.
But one of the greatest climbers in the Peloton.
He's just a beloved person.
And he won the Vuelta España
three years ago
now at this point. Yeah. Just a consummate helper of Jonas Vingegaard.
Yeah.
Just really one of the best domestiques probably to ever play the game.
His mom was there at the finish line, mm-hmm. and he had a really sweet, tearful interview where he was like, I don't see my family much. It's really nice to have this.
And I'll go on record now saying that he won because of me.
All right. All roads lead back to Caffeine Ron today.
When he was about 12 years old, I gave him a talking to in Durango as a junior development coach.
That's right. You and Patrick just being weird.
Yeah, being real weird. There is a video on our Team Woolly Mammoth Vimeo about this. But Patrick and I put on fake accents and basically schooled the entire Durango junior development team on how they should be dressing because they're all wearing baggy shorts. We said they should be surfing somewhere if they're doing that sort of thing. You know, they got to shave down every morning and
lube up their legs.
And so anyway, with these false accents, I became a permanent coach and I had to continue talking in that accent to all the kids' parents.
How joyful.
Real awkward. So they're like, oh, yeah, my son's told me all about you. And I'd be like, oh, he's a very nice kid. He's very strong.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Chapeau, hats, caps off to the Durango kid. Mm-hmm. The women's Giro started. We're stage three today.
This is the real gossip.
And the first stage was a sprint stage. And of course, Lorena Wiebes from SD Works wins. Mm-hmm. And immediately after that, I'm sure everybody's heard this news because everybody's talking about it. If you follow professional cycling, Lorena Wiebes was effectively disqualified after winning the first stage by like
winning. So you win the first stage, you win the pink jersey too. So. It's not only the first stage win is not only important for your palmares as like a stage win, but you also get to wear the pink jersey even if you're not a climber, which is, you know, generally always a climber wins the pink jersey overall or a grand tour overall. So the first few stages being sprint stages are very important because you do have that chance.
If you want to wear pink. And you're a sprinter, right now is the time. Mm-hmm. And what do? They disqualify her immediately.
Was it immediate?
After winning. Well, I don't know. It felt like it because it was that night. And it was because her bike was 20 grams underweight.
So for you not familiar with grams, that's like one or two water bottle bolts, depending on if they're titanium or stainless.
Barely nothing.
It's like a margin of error on a scale. And so somebody overnight just like axed that entire campaign.
And there's something real sketchy about it. You know? Like, it's just, it seems like such a harsh punishment for something that could be like a scales, give or take,
Lorena error rate. Lorena Wiebes is the greatest sprinter in the women's peloton. Would you disagree?
A gorgeous sprinter.
So, she would have won multiple stages.
Yeah.
And not only, so for her bike being 20 grams underweight, for a sprinter, that doesn't matter. I mean, even for a climber, that doesn't matter. 20 grams is nothing. But in a sprint stage, where of course weight doesn't matter at all, it's all aerodynamics, she wins by several bike lengths, clearly the best sprinter.
Clearly.
And
she's
overnight,
had an incredible season, just winning. Like
the podium, puts on the pink jersey, all this fanfare, blah, blah, blah. Overnight, they weigh her bike or do something. Somebody was like, oh, I'm going to lose a lot of money on this. We got to do something about it. And
first stage of the Giro women's can only have Italians on the podium.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Because after the disqualification of Wiebes, there was Elisa Balsamo is now because she was second to Lorena in the first stage. So she also won stage two fair and square. Mm-hmm. But you take Wiebes away, I mean, it's going to be her.
It's always going to be all Italians.
Without
Wiebes, it's all Italians.
It is.
I didn't get this until later. They not only took that stage win away from her, they kicked her out of the race.
I said that already.
Did you? I mean, they kicked her entirely out of the race. Like,
Caffeine
let that
Ron
sink in. Like, if that happened in the men's peloton, they would actually actually end the race. There would be such protests.
Which goes to show you just how little, you know, I mean, SD team, her team, Lorena's team is suing.
Suing, yeah.
Because this is...
I mean, it's crazy. This is crazy. Like, there is definitely weird. Some mob shit going on here.
That's what I kept saying.
Without a doubt, there's some sort of, like, betting. There's bets on... What are the... We talked about this last episode, too. The unfairness in sport now is at a whole nother level because of the online betting.
How easy it is to just have bets and predictions.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So this is definitely... This is going to be a developing story because it is...
But it does make the game interesting for the next couple of stages. So the Giro Women's has 9 stages this year. So, you know, in the interviews with other racers, they were not that sad to be having Lorena not be a competitor for them. You know, they're like, oh, I feel really sad for her. But it does make the field a little interesting. It makes me feel like I could actually win something, which is the flip side of the unfairness bit here. Man. Moving on from that gossip, Ron has been foaming at the mouth over the new Specialized Crux that just came out because you were a really big fan of the Tarmac.
Well, no, I was a really big fan of the previous Crux.
Oh, my bad. Right.
So tying back into the spirit of gravel haunting us, there has been a, you know, when you think about how the bikes have evolved for gravel racing from basically just being cyclocross bikes with maxing out their tire clearances. And so to modern day aero bikes, what you're seeing racing now with huge tires, we had the first ever winner of Unbound. It was 20 years ago. This is the 20 year anniversary of Unbound. Dan Hughes was a bike shop owner. He wanted on a custom Steelman that had been built for him. It was a cyclocross bike that had been built for him in the late 90s. He was able to fit 700 by 42 Bruce Gordon Rockin' Roads on there, but he was running Cerium. If anybody remembers these, one of the first system wheels, the Cerium. I also had those back then. Great wheels, but very narrow rims. So I'm guessing those Bruce Gordons probably measured more of like a 38.
Effectively.
But this bike was equipped with Campagnolo Ergo 10.
Beautiful.
With a Shimano Dura-Ace chain set. And so a real nice little Shimurgo. And just a cool bike. Like if you could go and look at it online, just look up like Dan Hughes winning bike 2006. And it's straight up an alt bike. Like any one of you would drool over that bike. It's just a cool bike. It's got all of the classic lines. And of course it's Campagnolo equipped. Give me a break. So it's probably the last time a Campagnolo equipped bike ever won a gravel race, but, but you know, we're all campy people here at Alt Bike Now, so that's how it goes. Yeah, so anyway, we're moving into the new Crux here. The Crux that was released in 2020 or 2021 had really classic lines. It was all round
tubes,
right. no drop
seat stays
or anything like that.
Yeah,
just looked like a bike, and it blew up the internet, I remember. And I remember just being like, well, this is what happens when you release a bike that looks like a bike in a field that was
like
just
a classic bike.
Like, you know, the S-Works Athos was also kind of like the road bike version of that. So just as light as possible. Light always looks better than aerodynamic. So it was just a cool bike. Anyway, so it was kind of everybody else was releasing gravel bikes these past few years with much bigger tire clearances, more integration of all of the brake hydraulic brake hoses, and of course the shifting's electronic. So everything was just becoming more aero optimized in gravel, bigger tires, of course.
You're talking so fast.
I'm talking really fast.
He's like swaying back and forth, just like talking about it like he's in meditation, doing chants. He looked like a monk, just being like, okay, 37.5 tires.
Give me 35. We got 38. You're getting me a 42 now. Give me 42. I have a Cerium system built wheels. Okay, well, yeah. I'm not going to stop.
Oh, that's great. No, please don't. That's great.
So, you got to call Taylor, you know?
Yeah.
You got 10 minutes to call Taylor.
I know.
And, all right, so the road bikes, road racing has become so fast, due in part to the aerodynamic optimization and the tires getting wider of all of their bikes. And of course, this crazy wide rims to not for ride quality, but to aero optimize the larger tires. Okay, so the new crux, I mean, since we spoke last week, we had all sorts of bike releases, as we thought we were, because of it being the run-up to Unbound. The new crux, I mean, so first off, Scott Bikes tried to interject themselves into this whole melee of new tech by saying that defending champion Cam Jones from New Zealand was going to be riding a 32-inch wheeled prototype Scott gravel racing bike. So, and he had all sorts of claims that this was going to, he was going to be
unstoppable.
He had some salacious quote that I can't remember, unfortunately, because it was pretty good. But he was saying that how easily he was going to win on this bike, essentially, which is kind of like, this is kind of like what we want in cycling. We want these personalities. We want a lot of, like, you know, weird tech stuff. It just makes the whole sport more interesting, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So introducing a 32-inch wheel to the biggest gravel race in the world and the defending champion, it's a pretty big deal. So if he was going to win on this, I think it would have changed. I think it would have accelerated, if it's possible, accelerate the 32-inch wheel craze even more.
I mean, he did come in top 10. So
top 10.
He's in 10th position.
I guess we'll say, like, I don't recall the name, but there's also an Unbound XL where they do 350 miles instead of 200. They go overnight. Mm-hmm. The course was ridiculously muddy this year. They got downpours in the middle of the night, and it turns the mud into just kind of like
sticky.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Peanut butter.
Yeah.
If you spread it on toast and took a bite, you'd probably be like, yep, that's peanut butter.
Yeah. Some of the coverage we were seeing had like one of those spackling sticks.
Yeah. There's always the spackling sticks taped to the tip of the bike. But so the mud kind of made everything a bit, you know, crazier than usual. Not that mud isn't an issue almost every year, but if there's a little bit of rain on the course, if you're out there for 350 miles, it's going to be, you're probably going to encounter some muddy spots, even if it's a dry day. So anyway, the Unbound XL was one on a 32-inch bicycle, a Scott prototype. Scott says they're never going to make it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what why they'd claim that, because they obviously are. It's a carbon fiber bike. That means they have to have a mold to make it. So they already paid for that. So they will make it. Bark my words. They're just kind of testing, kind of getting the hype.
If it wins something, I'm sure.
But, you know, so that was kind of midweek. And then later in the week, Specialized is like, new Crux. Who dis?
All the hot girls at the club.
All the hot girls at the club. I mean, if you clicked on YouTube or later in the week, I mean, every single thing that came up on my recommended algorithm was
Bukkake, all over the new Crux.
Crux Bukkake. And the new Crux looks like a tarmac, very aero, dropped seat stays. Unfortunately, but they do say that makes a little, I could see it making a little bit of compliance because of the way they shape the carbon. And they say they have to do that stuff now because the aero seat posts have no flex to them because of their shape. So they have to make it flex somewhere. So unfortunately, it makes things pretty ugly. Mm-hmm. Cool thing about the new Crux is, though, that it fits 700 by 55. So with the six millimeters of clearance all around, something
thick.
Like that. Thick.
Yeah.
Fits thick rubbers.
Yeah.
So that's that. So, you know, everybody is on aero optimized bikes now with huge tires. So Dylan Johnson, kind of at the forefront of this for a number of years.
Dylan
has even fewer tricks up his sleeve nowadays that everyone's doing this aero optimization thing. He's sharing his tricks.
Yeah, so, fair and square.
I really like Dylan Johnson's YouTube channel.
I like it.
It's cute. So where are we now, Namdahl?
I just jazzed. Went to a different dimension. Talking, just swaying back and forth like a monk in meditation.
I love gravel tech.
He really does.
I think it's important to stay on top of this stuff because it's your thing, it lights you up. I would love to ride these bikes just for fun, but they never call to me. It's never like, oh, if I had that in the barn, first off, it would stick out like my barn would probably like dissolve.
It would probably reject it.
Rejected overnight.
It would get its like army of raccoons to just carry it away into the stream. Nope.
Sorry.
Doesn't fit the barn.
Sorry. It's, yeah, and I constantly have
gotta look like a grandpa bike.
Right. SRAM helicopter would have noticed it. flying over our, as people probably know, SRAM surveils us.
But so. You would probably take that first winner bike, that custom
Steelman. Of course.
My
grav bikes that are in that, the spirit of that first bike, are definitely better now. If I want to advertise here, which I do, the Ally Max 2 by Ron's Bikes. Check it out.
Oh, ad break.
It's got the pretty much specialized copied R geometry. All right. So the crux is essentially the Ally Max 2 geometry. And we also clear 700 by 55, but ours have rim brakes. What technology? A new technology called rim brakes. Probably wouldn't have done so
well in
the mud.
Wouldn't have worked in the mud very well at all. You would have lost.
We still have a few size larges left, folks. So send me an email if you like. We're sold out of every other size. I've been kind of getting these things painted and shipped all week. So that ends that little ad break.
But since we're talking about gravel and report backs.
Oh.
Should we just call?
I mean, we did say we were going to call just about now. So yeah, we're going to call in to Taylor and let's see how this goes here. All right. We're going to put him on speakerphone.
FaceTime.
Because this is live radio, everyone, on WKY Jelly. Live.
WKY Jelly. Okay. Here's Taylor.
Did you do FaceTime? Yeah. For better audio. Good. See
right?
if the answer is now. That's live radio for you, folks.
WKYJ.
Hold it back a little
You're
bit.
You're live and on air.
You're
Hi,
live
Taylor.
On air, Taylor Finney.
We're live with Aria Cake, Ronnie Romance, and Taylor Finney.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us as our first guest ever on Alt Bike Now. I think it's ironic that our first guest ever on Alt Bike Now is perhaps the most celebrated United States of America. United States of America's most celebrated athlete
of all time,
of the past decade. You know, we got into it a little bit in the beginning that, you know, of your history racing Paris-Roubaix.
Children all across America, when they go to sleep with dreams of the Olympics, they think of one name. And it's Taylor Finney.
I like that.
Do you like that? I like that. Will that make the cut?
That can make the cut. So, yeah, we basically talk about you being like an Olympic Nepo baby. Cycling's Nepo baby, the original cycling Nepo baby. Baby.
Nice. That's what I want to be known as.
Yeah. That's what I really like that personally.
Nepo T.
Mm-hmm, baby. Mm-hmm. You know, so as I think you know, we're talking about the spirit of gravel here. And I wanted to get back a little bit into kind of, you know, not necessarily talking about your professional career, but kind of the how your professional career may have transitioned into an alt cycling career and then gone back to a professional career and how everything like that mixes together. Because what many of you don't know is that when did you retired in 2019? Is that correct, Taylor?
That's when we met, yeah.
2019, yeah.
You were with EF Education back then.
After meeting you guys, I decided to retire.
Bad influence.
Because as the story goes, in 2019, it was November, you show up. We had met at Grinduro, I believe.
Yes.
And you were like, I want to blaze with you guys. You were like, still a pro, but you wanted to smoke weed with me and Leo. And I think we did. Yeah, and then we probably talked about, hey, you were going to Boston or something, because it was EF based in Boston.
Yeah, we don't need to tie EF into so much of this blaze talk.
So you,
yes, I went to go visit EF headquarters, and then had a week afterwards. That I think I went to New York or something, and then
that's right.
When I was in New York, I wanted to visit you guys, and we did like a little overnighter situation.
That's right. We went camping. We went camping at Kakapanza.
I brought my bivy bag. We had a nice little outdoor
forgotten about that.
Grounding experience.
Mm-hmm. We did. Mm-hmm. I think we were still doing pies in the campfire at that point. Did you?
Right. Troy was there.
Yeah.
Balls was probably there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was a good.
I mean, that was the first time I saw Aria whip up a fire, and that was an experience mm-hmm. for me. Yeah. I was like, damn, the fire queen.
Totally. And everyone should know Aria is a complete pyro. So,
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love a big fire.
And so shortly, I think then you went back, you had to go, then you went to Boston and you came back via the estuary, but you had to take the train back and you came back. We have in our hometown
here. We didn't have a here, car. Ronnie we still and I living were both
with our parent, with my mom.
Yeah. So Dad, Taylor came and stayed with
and
us.
Clinton. And so Taylor gets off the estuary bus. Shout out estuary bus. If you live in the Connecticut shoreline, you know, the estuary bus is where people
who don't have cars,
or not.
And it's a long journey.
But also we have a number of special needs places along the shoreline here where that's kind of where the estuary bus gets its reputation. And so I go down to CVS, downtown Clinton. Taylor gets off the estuary bus, all 6 foot six of them. And you're
wearing that denim jacket.
Looking like Cedric the Entertainer at a wedding. And
yeah, it's a really powerful look.
You come out and I had not been following professional cycling during your heyday, unfortunately. I wish it was now so I can just be licking all over your taint. But that was Patrick's job. That was Patrick's job back then. So I was just like, oh, this nice guy coming to visit us. I think he was a big deal in professional racing. And maybe that was why, you know, that maybe endeared you to us a little bit, that we had no idea.
Yeah,
we just thought you were a cool guy. All right. My dad yelled at you for taking his jelly. Yeah, you're just staying with me and my parents. And then we went out for another ride. And I think you rode my Atlantis that time.
I rode the Atlantis. Yeah. That was also a bit of a life-changing experience.
Right. And anyway, so
double
you know,
double chest back.
Mm-hmm. Right, you had the double Fabs chest on there. So yeah, this is just like kind of a cool thing that was going on at that moment in time, pre-pandemic. This was just the world was
just
wide
time
open.
Traveled. That was such a hopeful time, wasn't
mm-hmm,
it?
Mm-hmm. But if
but
we,
you just got back from.
You just got back from
not
racing. Yeah, not hopeful times. I guess to bring our listeners up to speed, you've been retired since 2019, but now you're making a comeback. And I know you've probably talked about this comeback on several podcasts already.
Ron?
So I'm gonna stop. I am so jazzed. I've had too much coffee.
So much coffee.
I'm sweating. tell us a little bit about why the comeback.
You know, 35, I'll be 36 this month, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And I retired quite a while ago, right around this time that we were talking about in 2019, mostly because I just wanted to ride bikes for myself. I felt like my relationship with the bike was just becoming toxic, racing in the professional peloton, and I wanted to explore on the bike more than just push power numbers and get absolutely toasted by the rest of the world tour. So yeah, meeting you guys was a big pivot point for me. I mean, among other things, it's just like sometimes there things align. Mm. And I was getting into riding my bike for fun and also exploring the many ways in which you can build up bikes and just use them as tools for exploration. So I went through a couple years of just doing that after I retired. And only recently in the last year did I start riding road bikes again, kind of more consistently. And when I say road bikes, I mean like a contemporary 2025, 2026 carbon road bike gas. But it turns out they're just so fast. And I really started to enjoy going fast again and kind of connected with what I initially loved about cycling when I was a teenager, which was ripping, you know, going really fast with friends, by myself, and just finding that kind of that limit of how small I could get on the bike and how fast I could go. So that kind of snowballed into thinking about trying to go to the Olympics again. I've been to the Olympics 3 times. I really thought that whole chapter was over. But with the Olympics in LA in 2028, I just thought like, hey, I might as well give this a shot. I have nothing to lose because it's already lost in a way. The career is over. And kind of in this period of time in my late 30s where I can see the sun is setting on my physical ability to push, you know, maximum speed and effort. So might as well soak up this little sunset time.
I really like that analogy.
Give it a shot.
I really like that analogy as in being nearly 46 myself. I think in the last few years, I've also become more performance optimized because I feel like I need a handicap to ride with people younger now. No, it's and so, I mean, with all of this, do you think even with those, the way that you're riding, are you still riding for the sensation or is it more for fitness? Can they come hand in hand for the way that you're training?
I'm definitely still sensation oriented. I think I'm a feels guy.
But you're looking at numbers at the same time. So it's kind of like you're performance optimizing the sensations, would you say?
Yeah, but I do think in terms of zones at times, which like when I first started kind of, let's say, quote unquote, training again over the fall last year, I was just doing this. I would just go out and do climbs at this pace that I would call medio. This is like the Italian zone 2, zone 3. It's like in between what you would want to ride with a friend and in between going kind of too hard to where it hurts. It's this kind of sweet spot sort of thing, but I always just think of it as being medio because that's what they would call it in Italy, and that's what all the old ex-dopers would go out and ride when I lived in Lucca in like 2011. They'd just be riding medio wearing all black for like 6 hours. So I just tried to embody that spirit, you know, besides the ex-doping part of it, obviously.
I mean, one could argue the doping era was very romantic.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't get, I mean, no. Kurt Cobain.
Yep.
Needles. The needles are romantic.
The 90s were all about the needles, you know. And that was very romantic.
Was it though?
In retrospect,
needles are romantic.
Yeah. Many things in retrospect are romantic. I think that may be the definition, right?
Yeah, yeah. Some kind of like nostalgia kicks in.
Yeah, because we look back at these old bikes compared to what they look like now. I mean, that was a romantic era for cycling for sure. Skinny tubes, rim brakes, non-aero optimization, and no helmets. Right, you could actually identify the racers, and they seem to not care. I mean, imagine going into a bunch sprint in that era without any protection whatsoever. Just you and whatever
was condom on. No helmet.
You got to wear a condom in case you jazz because you sprint so hard. Incontinence. So
fully loose clothing as well.
True. Yeah, I remember Lance used to cut off the sleeves on his shirt so they would flap a little bit in the wind to get some. I immediately start talking about Lance and I'm like, I probably shouldn't have brought that up. Anyway,
it's okay. We were all fans.
Close personal friend of Taylor's, Lance Armstrong. We were all fans. We were all there at one point or another.
We got to give him credit.
He's good. He's good at what he does.
Inspiring us.
Mm-hmm. He did a lot for the U.S. bike industry at that time, too. So
absolutely.
Do you mind if we talk about your wife a little bit?
That's what I thought this whole interview was going to be about.
So, what is she wearing?
That's
what interviews are about.
Yeah, right. I just was wondering if, I'm sure it has something to do with it, but your re-entry into the pro cycling world, did it have anything to do with the success of your wife, perhaps, and just wanting to spend more time with her and ride with her? Of course, Kasia
Niwiadoma Fiddy.
Niwiadoma. After coming to a training camp with all of us, I love bringing all this up. After coming to a training camp in Ojai, where she went on a 25-mile hike-a-bike in snow in one of her training blocks with us, goes on to win the Tour de France Femmes that season. So, I mean, I'm sure that had something to do with it.
I'm sure.
Yeah, in the gravel.
And the gravel worlds.
The gravel world.
World, not gravel worlds as they call it here in the U.S., but the actual UCI Gravel World Championships.
UCI Rainbow Gravel Stripes. World Championships.
And I believe that was the first ever UCI Gravel World Championships, right, that she won?
It was for the women's, right?
Well,
but
it
wasn't broadcasted.
It wasn't broadcasted, yeah. Unfortunately.
Damn shame,
indeed.
They don't care about us.
Yeah, so what is... I mean, I'm sure has that been a factor? Do you guys get to train together now?
Yeah, I mean, she would use me as a punching bag quite often over at least the last couple of years. If I had a road bike or if I had any kind of, you know, I would go out on rides with her sometimes on my old Rally, which really wasn't fair to me.
Oh, that
considering my fitness level.
That was a Raleigh. That was a Raleigh professional, right? Or was it
my 50-year-old Raleigh?
A Raleigh. I think it was a Raleigh professional, which was their top tier racing bike in the 70s.
Still unfair.
I mean, that's Reynolds 531. That's tubing you can't get. It's so high quality. You can't get that anymore.
That's true.
It's not aerodynamic, but it's very skinny.
So I wouldn't say that I wanted to come back necessarily to be sort of like more competitive with her or anything, but having her around and then like deciding to ride more with her definitely brought my level up and allowed me to bring my kind of confidence level up around the whole thing. I mean, she scheduled a training camp in Gran Canaria over the winter, and I would have never done that on my own, you know? So the fact that she's waking up every morning and she's going out and she's training and she also enjoys training with me, it would made it easier for me to get up and get out and not have to self-motivate every morning. So I definitely have her to thank in terms of giving me some motivation to stick with riding when I first kind of started training again. And then, of course, now it's a lot more fun to ride together because I'm not just getting absolutely domed the whole time.
That sounds pretty fun. I'd be into that.
On a Reynolds?
I want to be dommed on a, yeah, by a, yeah.
Anytime you want to come out, my wife is ready to dom.
Well, she dommed on that ride. That's the only ride I've been on with her, and she definitely dommed. I was like, you know, even on the descents, like, I don't know. I mean, you remember that day. We all do.
I try to forget that day.
You probably try to forget that day.
It was traumatic for me.
But I remember being in
solo quest,
complete
for Aria.
Yeah, complete darkness, descending the coastal trail north of Ojai, and just seeing the two
really
of you.
Pretty.
Like she had no, she was not complaining about this terrible bike ride that we were on, hike we were on. She was not complaining about hiking a marathon, essentially,
in
the snow. No
just
fear.
Positive vibes.
Just like with a tiny headlamp descending down these perilous descents. Just so impressed by Kasia.
A
world-class rider. Indeed. All right, we're going to move on.
She still talks about that ride, actually, as being one of her favorite days out, just because of how wild it sort of got.
Yeah, we were really out there. I mean, everybody, if you go to Ultra Romance on YouTube, you could see the...
We did have that group presentation where we did a whole video on that ride.
So check that out. It was from like two or three years ago or whatever. Ultra Romance YouTube, folks. So we'll stop talking about your wife.
That's fine.
How are you feeling after your traumatic Unbound this past weekend, Taylor? Yeah.
We should mention to everyone that Taylor has started to do the whole gravel racing scene. Also,
how are you liking it?
Was that something that was like, I don't know, how did that fit into your new program here? Because you're talking about racing track. Like, how does it all come together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The gravel actually came first because I decided to do the track last year as I live in Girona.
Yeah, we should mention the track. The track is the biggest gravel race in Europe, correct?
The track is the Unbound of Europe, let's say. And I just kind of 1 month or 3 weeks ahead of the track last year, we were talking about it, dinner with my parents, my wife was there, and we were looking at the results sheet or something, and I was like, I bet I could do this in 14 hours or 15 hours or something. And then my wife was like, basically, put your money where your mouth is. Let's see it. And I was like, all right. I mean, so we had this kind of bet. And I hadn't really been, I mean, I've been riding consistently the last 6 years, but just for fun, like mostly mountain bikes, doing jumps and doing random rides to breweries and things like that. Like just total full pleasure cycling.
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay, I think I can do this track, you know, 330K. Or no, it's 360K, so 220 miles or whatever. Like, it's just, I'll just be riding.
What's the elevation on that?
It's 10,000 feet. It's not crazy.
Significantly more than Unbound, though. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some climbs. I mean, Unbound, the longest climbs are like 1K long. But yeah, so I put in these three kind of random training days leading up to the track. And then we did the track, and I won the bet. Let's just say that.
Hey.
Nice.
My wife never paid me, but it's fine. I'll never forget. But
yeah, that's we're gonna have to bring that up.
Get paid in kisses. Kisses,
yeah, I got a lot of back hugs from her. So, yeah.
It counts.
But that kind of, I don't know, I just liked being, we also organized an after party for the Traca, so it was a bit of a double whammy with the, you know, 14-hour cycling experience on one day, and then the 12 a.m. to 6 a.m. after party experience the day afterwards.
She mentioned to everyone that you're an accomplished artist and DJ. So you're DJing this after party.
Yeah, we organized the after party with two good friends of mine, Marcello Pantani and DJ Kinky.
I don't know whose name I like better. Is there any relation to Marco Pantani?
No, but I've had a few of my parents' friends make comments like, oh my god, it's so cool that Taylor's hanging out with Pantani's son. I didn't know that Marco Pantani had a son. And I'm like, no, it's a stage name, but
so do the Traca, and then you like were spinning at the after party right after?
Right. It is the next day. So part of the reason why I do the 360 and not the 200 is the 360 is on Friday, 360Ks. Yeah. And then the 200 is on Saturday. And then the after party is on Saturday night. So we did the same thing this year. So at least I have like around 24 hours to recover until I have to go to the nightclub and then bring the vibe. Each year we've done it 3 years now, and each year there's just more people, more energy. This year we got more actual cyclists involved who also play music, So Sarah Diekmeyer, she played at the party. Robin Gimperla, who just won the Unbound XL, he played a set, Vinyl Only, at the party.
Okay.
So it's like a little gravel community talent show in some way.
A pretty big gravel scene is building in Europe, would you say? Like, you know, Europe, you know, so we all know America's the best, right? Can we all agree here? So, you know, a lot of these cultural phenomenons are born in the U.S., alt cycling among them, gravel among them, right? And so we just have larger scenes for, would you say, for both disciplines here in the U.S.? Oh, crickets again.
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Crickets again. You know,
Yeah. I'll just let you continue.
Investigative journalism. Yeah,
my investigative journalism just puts out, you know, participation and just a sheer volume of events. The U.S. has been doing this for quite some time. Of course, this is the 20th anniversary of Unbound.
Sure.
So, you know, where was I going with this before I was put on the spot?
The community.
Yeah, the community of it all. We're just seeing more and more Euro pros. We're getting into the ghost of the spirit of gravel that haunts us. So I think a lot of people here in the U.S. who have been going to these events for decades, or just a decade, you know, they complain about the proification of gravel, right? And I think that this kind of started when Ted King did Unbound for the first time and 2017, 2016? Was that 10 years ago already?
Ted's fault, yeah.
It's all Ted's fault. Ted King, guy who lives up in Vermont, raced for the Leaky Gas. I love that. I always loved saying Leaky Gas because it implies diarrhea. So the an Italian team that implies diarrhea. He retired from pro racing and got into gravel racing and became a big star. Had a big afterlife as a, you know, was just a Euro pro domestique and, you know, started racing gravel and became a star in his retired career. And then more and more Europeans started entering the fray and you have more traditional road gravel racing tactics. At this point now, I think people are saying the spirit of gravel died. We want to say 2019 was the last gasp of this ghost.
Was it?
I don't know. That's what I'm kind of like looking at timelines. And I think in my opinion, that was kind of when it went. I don't know.
Because we put the final, we nailed the final stake into the heart of the spirit of gravel with Lockie and Alex and myself and the EF alt program.
Glad you got the cue. Glad you got the cue here. That was the end of gravel. The spirit doth cough from the grave. And so, you know, there was a lot of controversy because gravel had always been an individual sport, like something like a rugged individualism out on the prairie.
Triathlon.
That's going to get into one of Aria's questions later on. I guess, you know, so it's at this point.
So you think
now,
gravel is triathlon because I saw that in your stories. Does that mean gravel sucks because triathlons suck?
They seem to share a similar aura from my perspective in terms of, at least in what I would call the golden age of gravel, the gag, golden age gravel.
You could use these terms. We're freely throwing them around at this point. Yeah.
The spirit is dead. Long live the gag.
Long live the gag, the golden gag.
Because now, you know, I raced the other day Unbound with Aero socks, an Aero helmet, a skin suit.
Yes.
People have fairings on their bikes. Mm. And everyone just looks, we're starting to look, the aesthetic is going more into the direction of triathlon as opposed to going into the direction of the sort of rugged mountain man, ultra romance. Pre-golden age gravel aesthetic.
just golden. We'll call that age just golden.
Green gag.
kind of observed the same thing. To me, though, you know, Ari and I were talking about it the other day, and we were like, so if, you know, if teamwork is alt in many ways, because it, why? I don't know why. Because of cooperation. teamwork is alt because of cooperation. And no one wants to watch, you know, a hairy legged, bearded person
do anything anymore.
There's no market there. What are you going to market, a five blade razor to someone like that? You know,
no, so, nobody, you know, wears fedoras anymore.
Nobody.
It's a crying shame too. Long live James, whatever his name was.
So, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, gravel has gotten more exciting to me. Like, I didn't care about it before the Euro optimization.
Before the gag,
like pre-gag, I was like, this is so dumb. Like, to me, it was a triathlon pre-gag.
Oh.
Yeah, to me, I was just like, this is just a bunch of beer-drinking Midwesterners, like, trying to be hard men. Yeah. I don't know, they actually were. But it was just kind of like, I could remember,
respect.
I can remember, like, kicking the can around at this time into, you know, 2000, when I was getting out of my Cat 5 road racing career. Yeah, you know, we have so much in common, Taylor. You know, when I was getting was right around when these gravel events were taking off, and I could remember following all these Blogspot blogs, Guitar Ted among them, just trying to find like a flared dirt drop for my surly cross check. And just being like, I want to do more dirt. We've got a lot of dirt roads around where I live. I want to ride this stuff. We didn't call it gravel. We called it dirt roads because that's what they were. And I can remember the term gravel being thrown around as like a gravel grinder and making fun of it. You know, it was an inside joke, of course. And I could remember just being at like the Rivendell HQ in Walnut Creek in like 2010, and all of us unanimously just making fun of that term gravel grinder, and like having a bike that cleared bigger tires and being like, is this some sort of gravel grinder? And, you know, it was kind of like these races were already a joke within the alt bike scene at that point, because we have to have something to make fun of, because, you know, alt bike is all about elitism. And
socialized elitism.
And then especially when they started putting the clip-on TT bars on their bikes. I don't know when those were finally outlawed in the pro class, but that was kind of like the idea that I had of gravel racing, were these beer-bellied middle-aged men with TT bars.
Triathlon.
So that to me was triathlon. And now it's more of a team sport. Is it not?
No, it's road.
It's road, yeah. Which is, I don't know, it makes it more exciting for me. Me personally, I think it's more exciting that way.
It's really not too dissimilar to racing on the road. The level is of the whole group in terms of understanding group dynamics and even just understanding like how to ride with other riders. That is lower than on the road. Mm-hmm. But the start of the race, I mean, we're in the neutral kind of corral, and it feels like you're at the start of a one-day classic, and you're just fighting for position until the first sector of cobbles or whatever. But because there's not so much, because there's only two teams, let's say, there's the Specialized team and the Canyon team, as far as I can make out, it's not as hard to fight for position, so that's nice for me.
But it's
definitely like you have to understand how to move through the group, you have to understand where you are, which way the wind is coming from, and like when you're going to turn left and have a crosswind, or when you're going to go into this section or that section, and you need to stay in the top 20, otherwise you're going to get bottlenecked, somebody's going to have a crash, there's going to be something weird, and then you're going to be chasing. It's different in the sense that it's 10 hours as opposed to being, or 9 hours for the fastest ones, as opposed to being six or seven. So you have a bit more room to make up on the back end when everybody is gassed. But
so
it's just going to become more like road racing.
Yeah.
I mean, already if you look at the UCI gravel races, which maybe as an American, you don't even, you can't even.
I like them. I like the UCI gravel races better than our races. I take that back. America isn't the best.
It didn't take long for him to realize long. That.
I mean, when it comes to actual racing, I think American stuff is triathlon and European stuff is actually cool.
Because it's more like road racing. And I think that the UCI races are going to start to have more coverage. I mean, I think once the coverage comes into play and like Lifetime and Tracca, they do, I would say they do an all right job with the coverage, considering that they don't have like monster production media trucks and stuff at the finish, like all of the road races do, and then helicopters, multiple helicopters and all of that. I would say that they do a decent job, but once the coverage kind of comes up to the level of the road, and now with next year gravel racing, UCI gravel racing giving you world tour points.
No kidding.
They're just gonna, like, from my perspective, it feels like road cycling UCI would be very smart to swallow as much of the gravel calendar as possible and just integrate it into the basically like the world tour road schedule, because that's what it's becoming already. And you know, there was a Bora guy in the race the other day.
And we see Wout racing and winning on UCI gravel races.
You watch the world championships now, and it's just like a one day race for the world tour pros. They don't race any gravel all year, and they come to this one gravel race and dominate everyone who races gravel all year.
Right.
It's great racing. Like, it's super fun to watch. So I think from an entertainment perspective, it's really similar to like the one day classics. Exactly. And I can just see them sort of as having competed in both. They have a really similar vibe. So
that's a good thing.
I can see them being kind of one and the same eventually.
I like these takes. This is good. This is good for our listeners. Everyone really absorb this. This is the future of cycling that we're talking about here. Anybody who is curious about Taylor's take on racing Unbound, just go to his Instagram @Taylor Finney and check out his, were they stories or did you do some hard posts there? Cause they were pretty damn entertaining. I think that'll kind of give you an idea of what it was like live. I also implore
the stories in the highlights.
Stories in the highlights. That was really good stuff. Funny. And also your Tracca stuff was really good. Also, I got to say, you're certainly the most entertaining person to listen to. I don't know if biased here, but you know, you are very entertaining to listen to. I love your takes on all this stuff. Knowing that you know the other side of cycling as well, I feel like you have a unique take on it all.
Thanks, brother.
Yes. I want to get into some tech here. I want to talk about so the last time you had raced Unbound was 2019 when the Spirit of Gravel was put into the grave. What was the difference between your bike in 2019 and your bike in 2026?
Well, 2019 I was racing with EF, so I had to be sponsor correct for Unbound, which was not called Unbound back then. But we shan't say.
Yeah, you could listen to our previous episode where Aria goes over why the name change. Check out the previous episode.
Plug. So I was riding this Cannondale, and my home setup, I was looking through photos before we had this conversation because I was trying to figure out what tires I had on that bike originally. And I think I was able to fit like 42 WTV tires on this Cannondale. I forget what the model was called, but it was all orange, Ron's favorite color for nature.
And for hunting, yeah.
When we showed up to Kansas, I just remembered that the team had to swap out all of the gear on the bike to be sponsor correct. So I had a one by on there and I had my gearing and whatever, but they had to put on road stock components, and then the tires had to be Vittoria tires, and the only Vittoria tires we had were like 38s, which for Lachlan and Alex, because they're a bit smaller than me, that worked out, but for me, that was just not great. I had also just picked up 2 weeks prior the first bicycle that I ever bought myself, which is a weird thing to say, but real, at the age of 29. Cycling's Nepo, baby, okay? The first bike I ever bought myself was a Crust Bikes Dreamer, which was a 27.5, had clearance for like 55 mil tires. Mm-hmm. And I think I had 47s on there. So I felt like I had just picked up the perfect bike to do the Unbound in 2019. But because of team regulations, obviously, I had to ride the Cannondale. So I was sour from the start. Mm-hmm. And I think that I manifested basically the 8 flats that I had that day.
Oh, no. 8 flats? Oh my God.
8 flats.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of flats.
It took like 15 hours. I mean, there was a whole side quest where I ended up linking up with my friend TJ Eisenhart, who was also having a tough time. And he may or may not have had a vape pen with him. So that definitely added to our overall time.
Added or subtracted. You know, we talk in previous episodes about cannabis being a performance enhancer, but we'll get into that with you in a later conversation.
It's not. It may have added a few of the flats to where I wasn't sure if I was actually getting a flat or if I was just paranoid in the moment. But
those vape pens will creep up on you.
But anyways, I was very happy to be riding bigger tires, bigger clearance, even though this last Unbound was complete technical shit show for everyone, really. Yeah. It felt nice to be able to huck it through some rocks and not worry about getting a flat.
Now, last-minute decision, you chose not to run the Ultra Dynamico Brute 700 by 53 because I think you probably would have been disqualified for speed. those tires, I mean, say it with me now. Those tires are so fast that you felt unsafe at those speeds. Am I correct? And so you had to... I'll answer. That's a rhetorical question.
He just wanted to talk.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're following the women's Giro, but recently the UCI, they kicked Lorena Wiebes out of the race because she was riding equipment that was simply too good.
Too good. Too good. So very similar scenario here. We talk about this in the beginning of our pod. A very similar situation would have unfolded on the same weekend. That would have been bizarre. So obviously you had to not use those tires and you had to go.
Yeah. The Unbound commissaires were sort of creeping around our Airbnb the thing with the Ultra Dynamico tires is they have a certain smell and they attract authority. It's not what you want at the high profile.
We've been working on that, but to make a tire that high quality, it's got to have that smell, you know? So it's kind of, we can't really do anything about it, but so you had to run.
No, here's the reality is I could only run because of the potential for mud, which came because of the mud. I could only ride 50 and below, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was actually one of the riders on the biggest tires. Most people were riding 45s, which is a gasp.
Yeah.
So yeah, unfortunately, because of the fact that I was riding such a contemporary carbon bicycle, mm-hmm. I was restricted in my choices due to the amount of clearance that I had.
Yeah, if you're on an Alumax.
The Razos are on now, mm-hmm. and they're attracting authority left and right.
Oh, I like that.
I'm getting a lot of cat calls from random sort of older men as I ride through
Boulder. Ooh, that's what we're talking about.
Perfect.
You know, those are the people that have money, you know, they could buy those tires. That's always a good thing. So, you know, we're talking about the Ultra Dynamico 700x53 Brut Rosso. Okay. This is the, this means dirty boy in Italian. That's what I've been told. It is.
I know you can't roll your R's.
I can't. You want to say it for us?
Rosso. It's Ronnie Roman.
Oh, that is so good.
Oh,
so
wow.
Good.
It's like a purr.
So good. So that is our protected race casing, so you still have that softer durometer gray compound on top. It's probably better off that you didn't race those. They would have gotten all dirty and muddy. No one would even have known. So we'll just say that you're right.
It was pretty muddy. You got rained on, and
it looked terrible, as everyone could see in your stories. It looked awful.
Yeah,
was that the kind of the sentiment, or have you had some time to reflect?
Yeah, I think we all sort of were prepared. We were all prepared for an experience. We're prepared for some collective trauma bonding. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And I guess I didn't think, I was imagining that it was gonna clog up the wheels, but not necessarily, I didn't think that it was gonna have the effect on the drivetrain that it did, which is maybe just me being naive, but mm-hmm. my main issue was that I got so much mud in the chain itself that then the chain just wouldn't sit on the chain ring. And Payson, well, multiple people, not to call Payson out, but Payson told me that he actually peed on his chain.
Oh, we love pee on this podcast. Yeah. Please, more.
Pee, pee, poo, poo.
And not only Payson, but Braden and Lang also reportedly peed on his chain. And I didn't even think of that. And I can't believe, you know, that's just me still being an amateur at the age of 30, 35, 36. Yeah.
No, it's professional to use your pee in creative ways.
I would have, and I mean, in retrospect, I'm peeing all over that. The whole drivetrain. I just sprayed sugar water onto it, which did help, but I think for longevity of the components wasn't great.
Yeah. I actually saw a lot of pro setups with little, instead of the front derailleur, where the front derailleur would narrowly go, they had little drippers.
A little squirter
of chain lube.
I thought that was so brilliant.
That was really cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely some spirit of gravel stuff happening right there.
Mm-hmm. A gag, baby.
A gag. But we're kind of coming to the end of this interview here. Arya, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I can't believe it's
I know. Do you have anything to add? Like, we want to tie into this.
Oh yeah, you were passing.
Oh, okay.
You got passed by the girls, the girl pros, Sophia or whatever. And then you had an internal battle with yourself. Do I pass the girls? Do I be that guy or not? Tell me about that.
Well, yeah. So here's what happened. Actually, the girls were hot on my tail as early as the first feed zone. So they came through the first feed zone like 30 seconds behind me. And I was just, because I'd been standing on the, obviously, because I'd been standing on the side of the road for 25 minutes.
Not peeing on your chain. Yeah.
Not peeing on your chain.
So I was sort of like in front of the front ladies for quite a long time. And then ended up bridging across to this group with Payson and got some good speed up. Then after the second feed zone, there was this deluge and we were just, you know, slurping mud, which was terrible, but kept going. And I started to get this slow leak in the rear because I wasn't riding my Ultra Dynamico.
Right. I'm glad you put two and two together there. I was thinking the same thing. All right, continue.
And it was one of those slow leaks that I stopped, and there was no sealant coming out. I couldn't figure out what to do about it. So I would have to stop every like 20K probably and refill, just put some air into the tire. So after the third time that I did that, the ladies were upon me again. And so they passed me, and I gave Rosa, because she's like my number one in that front group, gave her some encouragement. And then I was just kind of in the background of the women's coverage, like 100 meters behind the front group of four, which actually ended up being five.
You're a very big woman.
But I was just kind of back there, and I was thinking, like, you know, I could probably be riding faster, but I'm also enjoying watching these gladiator women shredding. And like, I have nothing to prove, really. I also don't want to pass them and then have to stop again and refill my air in my rear tire. So I'm just gonna like chill here until I can change this wheel at the third and final feed zone.
You were taking in sensations, it sounds to me. Like you went from performance mode to sensation mode.
Mm-hmm. Appreciation.
Yeah.
And then I went back to performance mode because I just really wanted to be done with the whole thing.
Fair enough.
But
that's very relatable. Yeah.
But I'm very familiar with the way that, just from riding with Kasia and, you know, my mom, my sister, like you hear these stories of, and I've seen it firsthand, of women riding, they're just doing their own ride, and then they pass a man, and that man immediately accelerates to pass them back. And Kasia has so many stories of these men who will pass her and then be like going as hard as they can in front of her while she's just living her own life, riding her own ride. And these men are like looking back as if they're sort of like competing with her, and eventually they explode, blow up, and Kasia will have to kind of like accelerate around them to never see them again. And it's just this weird, uncomfortable thing that happens way too much on the training roads of this planet. So I was keeping that in mind, that I did not, if I was going to pass these women back, that like they could never see me again.
Yeah, I like that.
Because I'm not that guy.
You want to be that guy. And
I found we were on this bike path, kind of like wooded area after the third feed zone. And I was like, there's no helicopter around. Now is my moment. I'm gonna just pass, say what's up, good job, and I'm gone. And they can never see me again because I will never hear the end of it.
Yeah.
I had something like this happen to me on Route 1 in Connecticut here. Not long ago, I passed a guy on an elliptical machine bike. You ever seen one of those, anybody? Yeah. Well, he went, I could not shake him. Then he passed me again, and then I passed him again. He passed me again, and I finally just gave up.
He saw your long blonde hair and took you for a woman.
I've got an elliptical machine bike. I got this.
I've got something to prove.
Just another way our,
it's like the,
our lives are just the same.
The Zwift effect of like, you know, if you ride Zwift, that's just what you do. It's like somebody passes you and you try to get on the wheel. Mm-hmm. Or if it's always been like this. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
It doesn't happen so much with me, but if people try to, it's a very strange phenomenon. Like you also have pros training in Calpe or whatever, and there was a bit of controversy earlier this year with Jonas Vingegaard crashing, trying to drop this guy who was a YouTuber who was just filming him from behind. Like, imagine you go out for a run or you go out for a walk and you pass somebody and then they're just walking as close as they can behind you, like filming you. That's not an all right thing to do from a societal perspective. So why is it okay on a bike when somebody passes you to just jump on their wheel? It's if the person says what's up, or they're like, hey, thanks for the lift, or like, do you mind if I sit back here, then that's one thing. But just to kind of awkwardly sit on somebody's wheel or pass them so they have to pass you back and just do this whole thing, it's like, we're not racing, we're just out on a bike ride. You know, so
pretty awkward. And cycling, of course, happens social out skills. In the open, you know, and so you do have, in the era of society where we are today, where everything is filmed for YouTube, TikTok, or Instagram or whatever, and everybody is some sort of digital creator.
Like us.
You know, you chase down, this is the era where you would chase down somebody and try and get them on video, just, you know, completely.
But it's icky.
It's icky, I'm saying, it's icky, but like completely like removed from like the social interaction. You just want to get the content.
It becomes like a weird transaction thing.
Yeah.
But I am glad, Taylor, that you are very aware of that dynamic of the male rage as the girls pass you and
male rage
and being more social and friendly in this situation. That makes me very happy.
So to kind of end this interview, well, if we were to bring it around to
tell them why you're mad. Are there, so we'll ask you two questions, Tay-Tay. There's one is like, tell them why you're mad is a section we do where we're kind of dish out the things that we're mad about, and then recommendations for podcasts or books.
Where do you want to start? I guess we did the first one. Tell us why you're mad. Tell us why you're mad. Tell us why you're mad.
All right. That was great.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Why are you mad, Taylor Finney?
I'm not mad, actually, at all.
Yeah,
I don't picture you as a mad. I don't. Have you ever been mad?
Anytime I get mad, I just suppress it real hard.
Perfect. Lock it up in the basement. Don't let it out.
I just lock it down. Right down into my solar plexus. Right.
That's good.
Do you still meditate every morning?
No, actually. I stopped meditating because I felt like I was being less productive. So I wanted to wake up and just get the day going. But I still use some of the meditation practices, like if I'm having trouble falling asleep or if I want to take a nap, or really all in like around sleep. But just if I find myself kind of too busy, I think that I still have this place that I can kind of visit. But I felt like I wanted to be more productive with my time, which is, you know, some sort of guru meditator would be like, you're wrong. But
you're a pro now. You got to be like that. You got a SRAM deal?
In the works.
Okay. I mean, if you got a SRAM deal in the works, you cannot meditate. You got to get at it.
The guru meditators also will tell you what helps them too, you know, so it's not, I wouldn't take all of their words for it.
You sound as chill as ever and as centered in your body as any time I've ever known you, and since 2019.
Nothing to be mad about.
Damn,
brother.
Such a pleasure to talk to.
I do get a bit mad about, you know, the current government and just like racism in general, but that's in my own life, in my own struggles, I'm not mad about anything.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the mad stuff for us is usually external like that too.
What as a big person, what about the push to 32-inch wheels? Are you mad?
We're trying to get something out of you.
Yeah.
You're mad.
You want me to be mad?
Yeah. Are you mad or happy about that? Because it's kind of the 32 inch craze kind of fits right into your body type.
I don't really care about it so much. I think that if somebody sends me a 32 inch bike, I'll ride it and I'll probably be like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be, and maybe it's not, maybe I'm like, oh, this is weird, but I don't feel like I'm in a place where I need to be like, no, protect the 29 inch wheel or like, yeah, we need to push this sport forward. I mean, personally, I'm waiting for 36 inch, as you know.
Right. So. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. We're already working on it. Yeah.
It's aesthetically, it's a better number than 32.
32 is a weird number.
36 or 69.
That's right.
Yeah. All these sacred numbers. Yeah.
I'm a triangle guy like you.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's right. So. Strongest shape. I mean,
yeah.
I wonder what 36 is for numerology.
Yeah.
Ooh, it symbolizes creativity, altruism, and unconditional love.
I wonder what 32. Let's see what 32 is.
Oh, the
369. Damn you, five.
Did the sweat dripping down there? Okay, so 32 is a compound. Pop it in. 32 is not great. It symbolizes creative flow, communication, and adaptability.
Oh. Can we all adapt to 32? I don't know. Boy. Okay, well, you know, these are bigger questions.
We don't decide because we're not.
We don't decide.
And the marketing giants.
I asked Panaracer 2 years ago when I first saw 32-inch wheels at Made if they could do it for us, and they said absolutely not. And that is still their call right now. So, you know, we are basically 700C for life here. 700C 650 would be 26 until we could get this crowdfunding for the 36, the more altruistic number.
Yeah. Representing love.
You want to get into some? Okay. So we kind of will shelve the tech for now. You got any? I'll let Ari ask this
podcasts
question.
Podcasts or books talk you're about. Into? Because I know that you're heady and a deep thinker.
Eddie. I don't, let's see. Unfortunately, I've been consuming a lot of YouTube content recently and less podcasts. I mean,
oh, that's fine.
Of course,
that's good. Less this podcast. Yeah, I mean, it goes without saying.
Number one.
We're number one in downloads everywhere I look. Says my mom.
One of my favorite comedians is this guy named Stavros Halkias. He's totally hilarious. He's this very large Greek American man, and he's not like the MAGA comedians, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's on our side.
And so, a Greek comedian.
Check Stavi Baby out. Stavros Halkias.
Okay. Greek comedian.
Super funny.
Well, that's a good, and we all like to listen to comedy.
Otherwise, the original Grey's Anatomy book is a real showstopper.
What on earth are you reading that for?
I didn't know that was a book.
That's what the book was based on, right? No, I mean, what the show is based on the book, or
like
vice
McSteamy,
versa.
Like McSteamy, yeah. McDreamy?
No, get yourself an original copy of Grey's Anatomy.
Next for you.
Just if you're interested in the visual representation of physical anatomy.
Yeah, it's an anatomy book. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual series, I don't think.
No. Yeah, Nothing to do with the series.
Okay. All right.
Well, Arya's almost done with her fairy smut books.
Yeah, I know.
So
I'm ready for
this could be a good palate cleanser, just a dry anatomy book.
Yeah, I've been into a fairy smut series that I can't shake off.
It's more of for me, Grey's Anatomy is more of a book that I just kind of have. And when I'm interested in different parts of the body, I pick it up. Mm-hmm. It's not like a, let's read this thing.
Mm-hmm. It's like light reading. You're just like, you know.
It's pretty heavy reading.
I like that. And that, of course, you're an artist, so I suppose when you're studying a part of the body that you need to replicate on paper. Yeah, I like that. Okay. All right. Okay, so Spirit of Gravel. Does anybody care anymore? Like, is it done and dusted, gone forever? Where can the Spirit of Gravel live on, or does it even need to live on, people? I guess these are our parting questions.
I would also check out the Holy Spirit of Gravel on Instagram. Mm,
that's right.
We can't have this episode without mentioning the meme queen, the Holy Spirit of Gravel.
That's right.
Great account name. Yeah, that's great account name. So yeah, maybe we should just have our listeners check in on that, and maybe we'll
put in the show notes.
Maybe we can talk about this next episode, or does anybody even care about this anymore? Is it just gone forever? You know?
Yeah. At least you care.
Yeah, everyone's just doing Tough Mudders now, or Spartan challenges, right? Spartan race. That's what the spirit. The people who were previously infected with the spirit, that's where they've gone. The spirit has transitioned. And I think with that, we're just going to are we going to get in it? I don't think we definitely don't have time for anything.
I got to go. You got to go. An appointment.
I bet you it's a very important appointment, but we really appreciate
my body.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us today here, Tyler.
I love it.
I love you guys.
We love you too, Taylor. Thank you so much.
Beautiful day. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, get that body back in alignment, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, babes. Love you.
Love you too.
Ciao.
Well, that was pretty fun.
It's like an hour with Taylor.
I know he's got a real busy schedule now.
It was really nice of him.
Really nice of him to check in with us. So hopefully everyone found that enriching in some way or another. We will put all of those things that we mentioned in the show notes if you want to check them out. You got any parting words for us?
Yeah, I've got some.
Aria?
That was a really great episode, I think. Are there any podcasts that I would recommend? We'll save our Tell Them Why You're Mads for next week.
Yeah, keep deferring mine. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're mad about something.
I think I'm mad about being deferred so many times at this point.
No, you're not, because you definitely are present.
I am present here
today.
I'm sorry I didn't talk more.
There you go again. Not really mad about anything this week either. And the podcast that I would recommend right now is the Wheel Talk podcast, because they are doing everyday coverage of the Giro d'Italia women's. They're going to be going over a lot of the stuff with the Lorena Wiebes from the first stage every single day. They've got one out, and that's a lot of work, as we know. So I would recommend that for a listen. And if you want to hear some of the track stuff, I know that the Sturm sisters did a pretty good report back from that, because Sarah Sturm was there as well.
What's their podcast called?
Their podcast is called Talking Over You, which you should know a lot about, Ron.
Whoops.
He gets so excited.
I get so excited. I mean, bicycles, this is my life, everybody. I am animated by everything bicycle related, and oftentimes I just can't help myself. And that's why we have a podcast talking about it.
Mm-hmm. When he thinks about it, he can't help himself. Yeah, that's what I've got for the podcast recs for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I've been listening to my old CDs because I got a CD player, and I was flipping through the books, and there's this band called Zao, Z-A-O. And I was embarrassed to listen to them when they were current, because it was a Christian hardcore band, but they sound so evil. And the two albums that I love the most by them are Liberatus Ex Infernus and Save Yourself From Hell. But they're good guys, as it turns out, not like your Christian nationalists, so to speak. You know, this is just some really good music if you don't think about the other stuff, I guess. But it's the most evil sounding hardcore I've ever heard. And it definitely holds up. Like, this was, you know, they were at their peak in the late 90s.
It's not like POD.
No, it's not like POD. Yeah, it was kind of an era there, wasn't it? So, yeah, those are my recommendations.
Well, very good.
Shout out Joe Redbeard. He also, it's also one of his favorite hardcore bands that he still listens to also.
Oh, love them.
Okay, well, everyone, thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed our chat with Taylor. We will have more guests. And we will maybe be better interviewers, I think, because this is new to us.
Yeah, and we do this all live. Just, you know, this is all live. Better. No, we don't edit anything here. So, yeah. You know, so I hope this is a radio show. WKY Jelly doesn't let us edit things. This is live radio. So, everyone, I'm Ronnie Romance.
I'm Aria Cakefist.
And I hope you join us next week for another episode of All right now.
Bye.